Welcome, Red Ice members. This is our second hour. Thank you for joining us. We have been talking with Patrick Heron about his book, The Nephilim and the Pyramid of the Apocalypse. And we started to connect this thesis of his previous book into the new book called The Return of the Antichrist and the New World Order. And, of course, the idea that this will be led then by Apollyon or Apollo or the Antichrist. And before we get in and talk about this character and maybe even get into who it might be, if it will be, if he will be coming as a representation of a human being or whatever your take is on that, so I'm very interested in hearing that. But why don't we talk a little bit about the New World Order first, and you can kind of paint the picture a little bit for us and what you considered that to be. This is a theme that we've been following closely on the website and on the radio show, but it would be interesting to hear from you what you consider to be when it comes to the New World Order and where you see things are heading right now, Patrick.
Okay, Henrik, absolutely. Nice to be back with your listeners again. We can get into the New World Order. Just before I do that, I want you to read you something which I think is just something very short, which is also a great mystery, but which may sort of shed a little bit of light on all these things that we're speaking about, okay?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay, I got this from a friend. A man was riding his motorbike along a California beach when suddenly in a booming voice, God said, "Because you've been faithful to me and always, I'll grant you one wish. Build me a bridge to Hawaii," said the man. God said, "It's an enormous undertaking to build over an ocean. It would use up all the steel, all the concrete in the world. I can do it, but it's hard to justify. Is there anything else you can think of that I can do to help mankind?" The man thought for a bit, then said, "I wish all men could understand women. I want to know what she's thinking when I get the silent treatment, why she cries, what she means when she says nothing wrongs, and how I can make her truly happy, happy." God replies, "You want two lanes or four lanes on that bridge?"
There you go. Easier undertaking, huh?
Okay, well, listen, I'm sorry to be, I know we're speaking about very, very serious subject here, but we always have to have a little joke every now and again, right?
That's nothing wrong with that, absolutely.
As we say over here, many's the true word spoken in jest.
Yeah, that's right, that's right.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay, the New World Order.
Yeah, go for it.
Okay, the New World Order. Okay, as I said there just before we took our break, I was talking about this coming man, and by the way, he is a man. The point is that he's a spirit man. Just like we spoke about the fallen angels before, that they're men, and they're always described as men in both the Old Testament and the New Testament when these so-called angels appear. In fact, in one place in the New Testament, it says, always entertain strangers because some have entertained angels thereby. In other words, a lot of times people will meet angels and they don't even know they're angels. They think they're just regular men. So we spoke about this beast, Apollyon, who is Apollo, who's going to ascend out of the bottomless pit, according to Revelation chapter 9, verse 11. His name in Hebrew is Abaddon and his name in Greek is Apollyon, who is Apollo. By the way, his name means the destroyer. That's what his name means, the destroyer. Mm. And this, to give him his full title, he's called the beast who ascends out of the bottomless pit, having seven heads and ten horns, right? And let me read you one bit it says. Out of Revelation here it says, "And the dragon stood on the shore of the sea, and I saw a great beast coming out of the sea. He had ten horns and seven heads, with ten crowns on his horns." And of course, John, you know, this angel that's showing this vision to John, it was the Apostle John who wrote the book of Revelation when he was about in his 80s or 90 years old. He was on the island of Patmos, just off Turkey, when he wrote this. And the angel says to him, "Why are you astonished when you see this beast with seven heads and ten horns? I will explain to you exactly what they are." And then he goes on to explain, "The seven heads that you saw are seven hills. They are also seven kings. The ten horns are also ten kings, and they have ten crowns on their head, and the crowns represent authority. And it says these ten kings will receive authority with the beast for 1 hour or one short time." So when I spoke earlier about that this Apollo is a king, and he's the ruler, and he's an angel of the bottomless pit. King literally means leader or ruler. So to explain what the ten horns on his head are, let's get into that first.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Now, in order to understand this, you've got to go back to Daniel chapter 2. And in Daniel chapter 2, it talks about Daniel when they were taken captivity into Babylon. Daniel and several other of the Hebrew slaves there were put in the service of the king of the time, whose name was Nebuchadnezzar, because they were extremely clever. They were well-learned in astronomy, in mathematics, and various other things. And they were Jews. And like a lot of Jewish people, they're extremely clever people. You know, they always have been. They always will be. That's why, you know, Einstein was a Jew. Many of the great things that have been done in the world today were done by Jewish people. And, you know, they went in there in 1948 into a desert. Now they're selling us, you know, roses and oranges and things like that. Mm. So they're very clever people. Anyway, that's by the by. So Daniel was in the employ of King Nebuchadnezzar. So Nebuchadnezzar had a very disturbing dream one night. He had this dream where he saw this huge statue in front of him. The head was made out of gold. The breast, the shoulders and the chest were made out of silver. The belly was made out of brass. The legs were made out of iron. And then the fees, or excuse me, the feet were made out of clay and iron. It had 10 toes, which were made out of clay and iron. So Nebuchadnezzar woke up after seeing this vision. He was very perturbed. He called in all his soothsayers, all his the guys that look into the magic balls, the fortune tellers, the you know, all these guys who operate mediums. And he said, number one, I had a dream last night. He said, I want you to tell me what the dream was. Then I want you to tell me what it means. And if you can't tell me, I'm going to chop your head off. And they all said, Butcher, how can we tell you what the dream was? Please tell us what the dream was first. Then we'll tell you the interpretation. He said, no. Because he said, if I tell you what the dream is, you'll just come out with some, you know, a story which is fabricated to suit your purpose. He said, I want you to tell me what the dream is and what the interpretation is, or you're losing your head. Mm. So, of course, they couldn't do it. Now, Daniel heard about this, and he said that interpretations belong unto God. He was brought up to King Nebuchadnezzar, and Nebuchadnezzar told him, he said, can you tell me what the dream is and what it means? And he said, I can't, but God is the one who interprets dream. So God will give you an answer. So he went off, he prayed, then he came back to the king. And he said, this is the dream that you had. And he said, he told him that he saw a statue made of gold, silver, brass, of iron, and the toes were made out of both iron and clay. So Nebuchadnezzar was amazed that he knew this, and he said, and what does this mean? And he said, these represent five emperors. He said, the head of gold is you. Your empire, which was the Babylonian Empire at the time, is the head of gold. He said, your empire is going to be succeeded by the silver, which is the Medo-Persian Empire, which in due course followed the Babylonian Empire. He said the belly of brass was another empire which would come after that again. That was the Grecian Empire, where Alexander the Great was the leader of the Grecian Empire. And then he said, this other iron legs is one to come in the future. And the iron empire was, of course, the Roman Empire. Yeah, it was called the Iron Fist of Rome and all that. And then he talked about the last one, the toes you saw, the feet, is an empire that's going to come in the far distant future. And he said the 10 toes represent 10 kingdoms and are made of iron and clay. And then he said a very peculiar thing in Daniel chapter 2, verse 43. It says, they shall mingle their seed with the seed of men. Right? Mm. That's what it says in there. So what I reckon these are, when it says they shall mingle their seed with the seed of men, this is referring to the Nephilim, the fallen angels, which are to come. They are going to come. The world is going to be split up into 10 geopolitical regions, Henrik. Mm. Okay? Mm. 10 super nation states, if you will. It's going to be, when these guys appear on the earth, it's going to be under the leadership of this one ruler or king whose name is Apollo. Now, I don't think he'd be calling himself Apollo or Abaddon or Azazel when he comes, probably something else. The world is going to be split up into 10 geopolitical regions, and these 10 geopolitical regions are going to be governed by clay and iron. In other words, we are the clay. We are the human beings. It says in Genesis, dust thou art, unto dust shalt thou return. So we represent the clay, and the iron are the 10 other fallen angels, spirit beings, which are represented by the 10 horns of Apollo, which are going to receive their crown and are going to rule with him for 1 hour, which means they're going to receive authority for 1 hour, which means a short period of time. Mm. When he assumes the leadership of the world as this all-powerful Antichrist, the world will be split up into 10. His 10 other fallen angels are going to rule these 10 geopolitical regions together with human beings. That is the clay, that is the iron. And when it says they shall mingle their seed with the seed of men, that is what it's talking about. Mm. Now, as we speak, Henrik, as we speak, Ireland has just ratified the Lisbon Treaty. You know, we said no a year ago, and they said, well, we respect your vote, but now you got to do it again, and the next time you do it, you got to vote yes. And if you don't, economically, you're going to be worse than Iceland. We've got to stay connected to the mothership of Europe. They're going to take care of us. We're going to be, you know, sucking off the breast of the mothership of the European Union, and we don't go down the tubes. Mm. Everything has changed in Ireland in the last year. We're on the brink of the abyss economically. There's 435,000 people out of work. We're up the creek without a paddle, without swearing. Mm. So people, because they're scared stiff, and young couples can't pay their mortgages and are losing their jobs, you know, people voted yes.
Yeah.
So the point being that Europe is going to be one of these geopolitical regions. At the moment, in America, they have what they call NAFTA, the North American Free Trade Association, where America, Canada, and Mexico are joining up together as another unit. In South America, they have their own unit down there, the South American Federation, or whatever they call it. Then you go to Russia, this is another one entity. You go to China, there's another entity. The Arabs will probably be another entity. In fact, people have told me that the UN have already broken the world up into 10 geopolitical units.
Mm.
In fact, I've actually seen coins on the internet where it has, on one side of the coin is the world, and it's got 10, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, showing the 10 geopolitical regions. So as we speak, this is what's happening. Many of your listeners might be aware that recently the Chinese floated the idea that we should have a one world currency.
Yes.
Okay, so they're thinking of getting rid of the American dollar and having a one world currency. They also are talking about having a one world bank. So one world bank, one world currency, one world government. Then, you know, in Europe at the moment, they're discussing who's going to be the president of Europe. We're going to have a president. We're going to have a foreign minister.
Yes.
What the prophecy is saying is that the last great empire on this world is going to consist of 10 geopolitical regions. Now, a lot of people who are into eschatology in the book of Revelation say that Europe is going to be the beast with the 10 heads. Well, that's rubbish. There's already 27 countries in Europe and more are to follow. This is a worldwide phenomena. We're told that everybody in the world are going to worship this guy when he comes. In fact, in Revelation chapter 17, it says, the beast which you saw once was, now is not, and will come up out of the abyss and go to his destruction. The inhabitants of the world, whose names have not been written in the book of life from the creation of the world, will be astonished when they see the beast, because he once was, now is not, and yet will come. So twice it says that, the beast which you saw once was. What does that mean? It means that the beast, Apollo, Abaddon, Azazel, once was on the earth when he reigned for 1,000 years or so prior to the flood of Noah. That's why it says the beast which you saw once was, now is not. Why does it say now is not? Because he's locked up. He's incarcerated in the abyss, the bottomless pit, or Tartarus. He's locked up there. That's why it says now is not. And yet will come up out of the abyss and go to his destruction, according to Revelation 29, when he comes out and goes to his destruction.
Now, do you think that this means that it's a spirit entity that actually will go into the body of a human being, or do you think that it actually will be a more metaphysical experience, so to speak, than that? We will actually have some other form of entity ruling and governing us. I would think that if they were to pull this off, they would do it in the guise that everything is as normal, nothing is abnormal here, so to speak. This is just another human being that they will kind of introduce on the scene. What's your take on that?
Most of the people who study this and who write about the apocalypse and the Antichrist would agree with you. They say that this guy is going to possess some human politician. In fact, many evangelical Christians in America believe that Obama is the Antichrist because he's so slick, he's so good looking, because when he speaks to people, their hair stands on the back of their neck and all that. I do not believe that. And I'll tell you why, because even in that verse that I read to you, it says, the inhabitants of the world whose names have not been written in the book of life from the creation of the world will be astonished when they see the beast. And that see is literally look at and see with your eyes. And you have to remember, Henrik, when the original fallen angels descended onto the earth 1,000 years or so prior to the flood of Noah, they appeared as themselves. They appeared as beautiful looking gods, superhuman, supernatural, super powerful beings who looked like men, but who were irresistible to the women. The women of that time had sex with them, but they looked like men. When this guy arrives on the earth, it's going to be the same thing because it's the same man. I don't believe he's going to possess anybody. I believe him and these other 10 kings and the 7 heads, they're all kings. They're all the same things. Mm. 10 and 7 makes 17, right? They're 17. Right. In another place in Revelation, it says another beast rises up out of the earth having 2 horns. That's another guy. We can talk about him in a minute. I believe it's the Mahdi, or the 12th Imam. Remind me to speak about him, and he's got 2 horns. That's right. Another 2. So 17 and 3 makes 20. In the book of Enoch, Enoch gives us the names of the leaders of the 200, 20 names. So there's 20 leaders in the book of Enoch. There's 20 kings, quote, end of quote, here, rulers, fallen angels. I believe they're going to come as they are. And I'll tell you why I believe that, Heinrich. If you go down to your cinema in wherever you are in Sweden today, or in Norway, or in Dublin, if you're getting the same movies that we're getting, about 7 out of 10 or 8 out of 10 of all the movies that you'll get there are all mystical, spiritual, witches, fallen angels, stargates, etc., etc. For instance, here's a thing my kid wrote down for me a few weeks ago. What's playing in Dublin at the moment? Angels and Demons, Twilight, Harry Potter, Coraline, Drag Me to Hell, Ghosts of Girlfriends Pasts, Monsters vs. Aliens, Night at the Museum, Race to Witch Mountain, X-Men Origins, Batman, Knowing, and Knowing even has a rapture in it.
Highly symbolic, that film, by the way, but yeah, go ahead.
Absolutely. On TV, you got Most Haunted, World Secret Ghosts, Crossing Over with John Edward, Our Psychic Family, Heidi Zombie, Psychic Detectives, Buffy the Vampire Slayer, Dark Angel, Charmed, Heroes, Stargates, etc., etc., etc. For the last 30, 40 years, the whole world is being conditioned for the appearance of these beings to appear on Earth, right? And it's being done very, very subtly with all these movies we're seeing at the moment. From the time you're born, Heinrich, or watching all this stuff on the television in cartoons, you know, then into, you know, the nice teenage stuff, all the movies and the books, the Harry Potters, Dark Angel, Buffy, you know, it's all conditioning people to getting them ready for when these guys are going to appear on the earth as these fallen angels. Yeah. I have absolutely no doubt about it. By the way, I should mention at this point too, around the same time that the Apollo and the rest of the 200 fallen angels are released onto the earth again out of the bottomless pit. If you go and read Revelation chapter 12, it speaks about a war in heaven. It says, and there was war in heaven. It says Michael and his angels fought against a dragon and his angels. And it says their place was found no more in heaven, and they were cast down to the earth. And it says, woe unto the people of the earth, for the devil is cast out and his angels with him, and he is very wroth because he knows his time is short. That means he's very angry because he knows that he's got a very short time. So we're told that there's going to be a war in heaven, not a battle, but a war between Michael, and Michael and Gabriel are the only two angels that are mentioned in Scripture. Michael is always the sort of security guy. He's the military arm, as it were. And it says there's a war between him and his good spirit men, and the devil, or the dragon, or the serpent, or Satan, and his evil fallen angels. And it says, their place is found no more in heaven, and they are cast down to the earth. Now, this begs a very interesting question. Most biblical scholars say that the devil was kicked out of heaven thousands of years ago. But I do not believe that. because we're told that this war is going to happen. It's going to happen in the future. And furthermore, in that same chapter, in Revelation chapter 12, we're told that this guy, Satan, and Satan means the adversary.
Yes.
He's adverse, yeah? And he's called the accuser. It says he appears day and night before the throne of God, accusing the brethren. One of his names is the accusers. So, who are the brethren? The brethren are Christians, people like me, people, you know, these Bible thumpers or, you know, born-again nutcases like me who actually believe in this stuff. And it says, day and night, Satan appears before the throne of God accusing the brethren. He's down there, he's saying, look at that Paddy Heron guy down in Dublin. He was down there in Mayo for the weekend in his cottage. He'd 5 pints of Guinness, he'd 2 Irish whiskies. Then he went home and had a row with his wife. Then he kicked the cat. He's a bad dude, you know. He's a sinner. He's no good. So he's up there rehearsing the sins of Christians before the throne of God. That's where they live at that time. Now, they have obviously access to it. In the blink of an eye, these guys can come up and down because he is also called the God of this world. He's called the God of this world. You might remember when he was tempting Jesus way back, it says he took Jesus to the highest pinnacle of the temple, which is a miracle in itself. He was able to levitate Jesus up there, and it said he showed him all the glories of the world in a moment of time. Just like that, a split second, he showed Jesus all the glories of the world in a moment of time. And he said to Jesus, he said, all this power will I give you, and the glory that goes with it, for it was delivered unto me, and to whomsoever I will, I give it. He says, if you bow down and worship me, I will give you this. Now, I'm wearing a shirt here, Henrik. I could not give you my shirt if I didn't have it. He could not offer the world to Jesus and all the power and glory with it unless he has it. And he is called in the Bible the God of this world. The Bible says there's two gods, the one true God and this other guy. And he is the God of this world. And that's why the place is so screwed up with famines, with diseases, with wars, with earthquakes, with all the place. That's why it's screwed up. But, of course, we don't know this stuff. Because nobody ever taught to us, and you think anybody who reads the Bible is a nutcase, okay? So, there's going to be war in the future. These guys are getting cast down to the earth around the same time that Apollo and the rest of his mates are coming out, and I believe that they are going to appear as is. Maybe some sort of a spaceship is going to appear. In fact, I got an email from a Christian guy in New Zealand a few years ago, and he read my book, and he told me that he had a dream. He had a vision one night, where he woke up and he looked up and he saw all these giant pyramids coming down out of to earth. And somebody said the Nephilim are here. And he saw the Nephilim coming out of these pyramids. Now, this may just tie in with what we spoke about earlier when we spoke about the prophecy in Isaiah, where it talks about an altar and a pillar in the middle of Egypt. And it was a sign and a witness of the future coming near the coming New Jerusalem. As I said to you, the devil always copies or duplicates or imitates what the true God does. And we know that there is the city of God is going to come after, at the end of the book of Revelation, which is over 1,000 years, by the way. After the apocalypse, there's 1,000 years of Jesus Christ going to rule on this earth. Then the whole place is going to be burned up. There's going to be a new heaven, a new earth. And this giant city, which is a pyramid in shape, is going to come down. So perhaps Satan and his guys will fall to earth in pyramid-shaped spaceships. I do not know. But I've no doubt that all the UFO that's going on, Henrik, the abductions, crop circles, sightings, lights, all this stuff is together with all the movies that are going on at the moment, the TV programs, the books, are all subliminally conditioning the population of the world for the appearance of these beings to appear on Earth. They talk about Planet X, they talk about Nibiru, they talk about the Anunnaki that are to come again and are going to, you know, bring mankind to its next level of evolution and all that stuff.
Mm.
So all this stuff is fitting in with the biblical accounts, okay?
Yeah.
I believe when these guys appear, they're going to appear as, they're not going to be possessing people. People are going to see them. Because we're told that when the Antichrist comes and the false prophet, who's his right-hand man, it says they're going to deceive almost the whole world with their lying signs and wonders and miracles. See, when Jesus was on earth, it says he did signs, miracles, and wonders. You know, the first thing he did was, turn water into wine. You know, now, that's the type of guy I want to hang around with. You know, a guy that can make very good Chianti or a very good Rioja.
Right.
You know, because I like my red wine, you know, and I like fishing. And he also caught fish, you know, in his risen body. He he caught fish and he cooked it for the lads when they were all out fishing and they couldn't catch anything. They saw he was on the side, and it says Peter was in the nude and he dived into the water, and they came to the, they cut, it say, he shouted out at them, they were in the boat, and he said, have you caught anything? And they said, no, we fished all night and caught nothing. And he said, well, throw the net on the other side and ye shall find. So they throw the net down the other side of the boat, and it says they caught 157 great fish. We're even told the exact number.
Hmm.
Then somebody said, this is the Lord. Now, this is after the resurrection, right? This is the same guy that they'd seen. They'd beaten seven shades of you-know-what out of him for 2 days and two nights, and he was crucified on the cross, beaten beyond recognition, you know, and dead. And one says, it's Jesus, he's on the side. So they flew in, says nobody said anything. When they got there, he was cooking fish. Nobody said a word to him because they're looking at, hey, this guy is after getting up from the dead. He's a ghost. He's a phantom. And it says, give me some more of the fish. So they gave him some more fish. He chopped their heads off, chopped their tails out, cleaned them out, cooked them. Then it says he blessed the fish and he gave it to them and they ate breakfast. Now, that's the type of guy I want to meet, Henrik, because I love fly fishing. I'd like to go fly fishing in Sweden someday. I love catching the odd salmon or a sea trout, cooking the sea trout, and then washing it down with a nice glass of red wine, Chianti or Rioja. And this guy is good at both. Right. So I wouldn't be surprised, I'm getting off the point here, I wouldn't be surprised that when the Antichrist arrives, maybe he's going to change water into wine. Perhaps he's going to feed, you know, the starving millions by turning, you know, a few loaves of bread into lots of bread. Because this guy is coming. When he comes on earth, he's going to come priest. Peace on earth, quote, end of quote.
Well, exactly, because that's interesting you bring that up. I wanted to ask you about that, because it seems to me then the way that the rest of humanity is going to accept this, so to speak, either if this is from an external force that's coming in or coming down, the situations on Earth at that point would have must be much more much worse than they are now, so to speak, and for us to kind of accept them as our saviors, if you will. And the question then is, do you think there will be war or famine, as you talked about before, ahead of time, ahead of the fact that these guys are going to show up? So they create a scenario where things are so awful, if you will, on the earth, and then at that point the solution to that problem comes in, so to speak. Well, what's your take on that?
Well, I think that's very perceptive, and I must say that the questions you ask are very incisive and perceptive, and I commend you for that. I'll tell you how I'll answer this. Last year, we had food riots in 30 different countries, right?
Yeah.
There's about 10,000 children dying every night for want of a little fresh water and some food. The world is already in a very precarious position, Henrik. In fact, I wrote in my first book, Apocalypse Soon, which was published in 1997, I said that it's very possible that there will be a catastrophe on the world before the Antichrist arrives. And I said, what this catastrophe may be is a worldwide financial collapse, right?
Mm.
I wrote that in 1997. Now, we've come very, very, very close to that recently. And that's not off the cards because, you know, in all the money we have today, it's just paper. That's all it is. It's not backed up by gold. It's not backed up by anything. It's based purely on confidence. And it's all screwed up between America, Europe, everywhere. The whole place is all screwed up. So it would take very, very little to push the whole world over the edge to the point where you go to the shops and there's nothing in them. I mean, it's not so bad maybe for you in Sweden or for us in Ireland, because there's only 4 million of us and a few million of you, and we're in the country. But could you imagine what it'd be like living in Paris with 11 or 12 million people if all of a sudden there's a financial collapse, or in New York or in London? Within 2 days, people would be murdering one another for a loaf of bread.
That's
so
right.
The point is that we're almost on that brink now. We should talk in a few minutes about the signs that are going to accompany the apocalypse. But I believe all these things are now. That's why we have the EU getting together. We have the world already being split up into these 10 geopolitical regions. That's why you will hear Gordon Brown, the Prime Minister of England, in one speech last year, in a 20-minute speech, he mentioned the New World Order, I think, 9 times.
Yes.
I've heard this expression, New World Order. I've read it in newspapers in Ireland. I've read it I've heard politicians talking about it. This is the New World Order. Notus Ordo Seclorum. Now, I do not know, Henrik, whether Obama or Sarkozy or Barroso or all these guys, whether they're doing this wittingly or unwittingly. In other words, they know what's coming down and they're getting ready for it, or they're just doing what somebody else is telling them.
Mm.
That some other people are in communion with these spirit beings that are running the show, like the god of this world, Satan. I mean, I know of people who've seen Satan, where he's appeared in places. That apparently the Masons in the highest echelons of the people who run the Masonic lodges, that they are well in tune with Satan and they worship him, and they're pushing this whole thing. And that's why you've got the pyramid on the back of the dollar bill with the all-seeing eye of Ra and the words Novus Ordo Seclorum, which means New World Secular Order.
Mm-hmm.
And that this is all part of the master plan of these guys. I don't know whether our politicians are doing this wittingly, unwittingly, but what I do know is that it's all happening right before our very eyes, and that we're very close to that.
You mentioned... Oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead. You say.
Just want to mention here the 20 kings that you mentioned before. I mean, could that be alluding to the G20, for instance, considering how much they are working to bring in the New World Order, or at least what they call the financial New World Order?
Well, extremely perceptive. I never put the 20 kings together with the G20. I was thinking in terms of the G7, because it speaks about the 10 heads, or the 10 horns, excuse me, which are the 10 rulers that are going to rule with Apollo, and it talks about the seven heads, and I was thinking the seven heads might be the G7.
Mm. Yeah.
Now I don't know exactly who these guys are, but I have a slight speculation. Let's talk about the four riders of the apocalypse, okay?
Yeah.
Now with the four horsemen, or the four horses of the apocalypse. Remember, we used to see this back in the good old days in the 60s when, you know, I used to be sitting out there in the desert in Arizona smoking marijuana, you know, and listening to the Grateful Dead and people like that. And you would very often get these album covers with these four horsemen from the apocalypse, you know, vile-looking creatures bounding out with all sorts of things. And there was the white horse, the red horse, the black horse, and the pale horse, right? Now, the white horse, it says he goes out to conquer, but he's got a bow with no arrow. And the reason he's got a bow with no arrow is because he goes in the name of peace, and that's why he doesn't have an arrow. He goes in the name of peace, but he ends up making war. This is Apollo. This is the Antichrist. This is this beast from the abyss. And the reason he's on a white horse is because he's Antichrist. And Antichrist does not mean against. It means in the stead of. He's in the stead of Christ. When this guy appears, he's going to appear as the true Messiah. He's going to announce himself to the world as the real Messiah, which means he'll be acceptable to the Jews. They're still waiting for the Messiah to come the first time.
Right.
He'll be acceptable to the whole of Christendom, which is like the billion Catholics and people who don't really know anything about real Christianity, and to all these other so-called Christian churches, which are just nominal Christian churches. They're not really believers at all. They just go along for a half an hour on Sunday and count their beads and chant their chants and then go home and spend the rest of the day getting drunk and, you know, chasing women and stuff like that. So this guy is coming in the stead of the Messiah. That's what he is. And at the end of the book of Revelation, when Jesus Christ does come back, it says he's coming back on a white horse. So again, we see that this Antichrist is a counterfeit Christ. In fact, it says that this counterfeit Christ, when he comes on earth, it says he receives a deadly head wound, and he's going to be raised from dead in the sight of the whole world. That means this guy is possibly be assassinated. He's going to die. I think he's going to get assassinated. Sky is going to be there, CNN is going to be there, Fox News are going to be there, and in the sight of the whole world, because of the TV we have today, he's going to be raised from the dead by the power of the dragon, we're told. Now, this again is a counterfeit resurrection, because this is what these guys are into. They're into deception, they're into deceiving the whole world, they're into counterfeiting what the true guy did. So he is the rider on the white horse. That's why he's got a bow with no arrow. Then we have the rider on the red horse, and it says he's given power. He's given a sword, and he's given the power to take peace away from the world so that men will kill one another. So he's the rider on the red horse. Now you go back to Greek mythology, and Mars was the god of war, and the planet Mars is a red planet. All these guys, by the way, have names of either stars or planets, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think the rider on the red horse may very possibly would be Mars, who again worked and reigned with Apollo back in the days of our, along with Mercury, Jupiter, etc., etc. Then it talks about the rider on the black horse. Black in the Bible always denotes scarcity and famine. And the rider on the black horse has a scales in his hand. And he says, three handfuls of wheat for a day's work and a handful of barley for a day's work. And do not hurt the oil or the wine. Now, if you're getting three slices of bread and another slice or four slices of bread for a day's work, Henrik, that is economic famine. It is economic collapse. It's scarcity of bread. Mm-hmm. If you're getting a few slices of bread for a day's work, that's the rider on the black horse. So the famine are coming. Then the rider on the pale horse, it says death and Hades follow him. So I think he is the angel of death. It talks about the angel of death passing over to Egypt in the Old Testament when Moses escaped from the land of Pharaoh, and all the eldest of the Egyptians died, and all the cows and sheep and horses and stuff like that died. So I think that the rider on the pale horse is the angel of death. So I think we have Apollo, Mars. Oh, by the way, I forget to mention, the god of economics, as it were, in the Greek and Roman mythology was Mercury. The economic god, as it were. So that may be Apollo, Mars, Mercury, and the angel of death. And then it talks about Hades and death and the grave following after the guy on the pale horse. But this ties us in with the signs of the apocalypse, okay? Yes. Which we need to mention. We haven't talked about yet. About when this stuff is going to happen, Heinrich. Because there's very, very, very bad news coming down the tracks. But there's also extremely good news. And I want your listeners to understand that. All my books are about, what I do in all my books is I give people enough of the evidence so that they can come to an informed verdict, an informed conclusion as to what they want to do with their future. Because there's very, very good news also coming down the tracks. And it's a bit like this. Supposing you were over in Ireland, you know, and you were down the south of Ireland in Cork, making a film, a documentary, and it was 1912. And you were on the way down to get on this beautiful big boat that was going to take you to a new land of hope and glory across the sea called America. And I stopped you, and you were with your family, and I stopped you, and I said, Henrik, don't get on that boat, it's going to sink. And you said, what do you mean sink, Paddy? This boat can't sink, it's unsinkable. This is the Titanic. And I said, well, I have the proof for you. And you said, what proof do you have? And I pulled out the video Titanic, right? Mm. And you watched that. You know, it would do two things to you. Number one, it would frighten the you-know-what out of you. Yeah. It would frighten the life out of you. Number two, you'd be very, very thankful that you did not get on that boat. So the bad news is the Titanic has gone down. The good news is you don't have to get on it. There's an escape route. There's an alternative. There's a way out. And that's what I show in my books. So I just want to get on a little bit about the signs of the apocalypse. Can we do that?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay, let me just take a mouthful of tea. Excuse me.
No worries. I can mention in the between time there, by the way, that apparently J.P. Morgan, one of these financiers of the time, 1912, was scheduled to go on the Titanic, but he was warned or something happened there, so he got off in time. So one wonders, of course, if there are these kinds of little hints out there as well, you know, about certain people who managed to stay alive during some of these interesting events, you know.
Well, it'd be interesting to find out who whispered in his ear and told him not to get on, you know?
Exactly.
Because these people, you know, as I mentioned to you there a few minutes ago about when Jesus was being tempted by the devil, he says, all this power will I give you, for it was given unto me, and to whomsoever I will, I give it. Mm. So if you want to know who gave Hitler the power, who gave Stalin the power, who gave Pol Pot the power, who gives these people the power to get into these high places, including the Pope, by the way, then, you know,
yep.
All this power is mine, and to whomsoever I will, I give it. Yep. Gave it. That's what the devil said.
That's
but
right.
Anyway, in Matthew chapter 24, Luke chapter 21, and Mark chapter 13, is where the disciples came to Jesus, and they said to him, some of his closest friends, and they came to him in the Mount of Olives, and they said, look, what will be the signs of the end of the world and of your coming, your second coming? Because not a lot of people know this, Henrik, but the guy is coming back again, okay?
All right.
So they said, what will be the signs of your second coming? And the first thing he says, do not be deceived. Many will come in my name, saying, I am Christ, and will perform many signs, miracles, and wonders. And there's one particular one going to come in saying, I am Christ, and that is the Antichrist, the one who's going to come in the stead of Christ that we spoke about a few minutes ago, and they're going to do signs, miracles, and wonders. And then he went on to say, you will hear of wars and rumors of wars. nation shall rise against nation and kingdom against kingdom. And the Greek for kingdom there is ethnos. Ethnos, both ethnos. One ethnic group against another ethnic group. You know, Hutu, Tutsi, Catholic, Protestant, Arab, Jew, black, white, etc., etc., etc. He said there'll be an increase in famines. There'll be an increase in earthquakes. There'll be an increase in peculiar weather. He said people's hearts stopping because of the roaring and tossing of the waves. Now, we had a great example of that a couple of years ago with that tsunami over in Thailand, which wiped out hundreds of thousands
Sumatra,
of people.
That's right.
The tsunami. He literally says that. He said, the winds and the sea is roaring. Then he goes on to say there'll be corruption in high places, immorality, lawlessness, you know, people becoming lovers of money rather than lovers of other people, etc., etc. Now, I know a lot of your listeners are going to say, look, we've always had wars, famines, earthquakes, etc. Now, I could debate that with you, and I could show you that in the last 90 years, we've had more people killed in wars than any previous time. You know, 30 million the First World War, 60 or 70 million in the Second World War, which was only 50-odd years ago, etc. But there's one sign about the end times that's incontrovertible, and that has to do with the Jews, with the children of Israel. There's many, many, many prophecies that said in the Bible that the Jews would be kicked out of Palestine and Israel, that they would be scattered to the four corners of the world, and that everywhere they would go, they would be despised and persecuted and hated of all nations. Now, in 70 AD, a Roman general called Titus came in to put down an insurrection. He slaughtered about 1 million Jews. The rest were scattered to the four corners of the world, hence the wandering Jew. Everywhere they've gone, they've been persecuted and despised and hated of all nations. And that culminated in the Holocaust in Germany when the Nazis murdered millions of Jewish people, right? So that prophecy came to pass. But there's many, many other prophecies said in the last days and in the last generation that God would regather the children of Israel and that he would establish them back in Israel and in Palestine again. And he would do this as a sign to the rest of the world that we're in the last generation, the last throw of the dice, as it were. And in fact, in one prophecy in Jeremiah said that this would happen in one day, that they would become a nation state in one day. And in May, back in 1948, the Brits went in with a proposal to the UN that the Jews should be given their own state back in Israel again. And it was backed up the Americans, and they were given that. So literally in one day, Israel became a nation again, a nation state once again. Yes. Now there's 6.5 million of them now in Israel. World peace is contingent upon what happens in that little small piece of land out there in Palestine. So we are the generation that have seen this come to pass. That's happened in 1948. So when your listeners switch on their TV tonight and they see trouble down there between Hamas or the Palestinians or the Iranians or the Jordanians, and there's rockets going into Israel and Israel are fighting with one another, we are watching that prophecy coming to pass. We are that generation. We are in the last throw of the dice right here, right now. And all world peace happens to be contingent upon what happens in that little small piece of land, which is only like 100 kilometers long or 150 kilometers long and about 80 kilometers wide. You know, there's thousands of people dying in other wars, but everything, Middle East, it's like a time bomb whose fuse has long since been lit. And when it does explode, it's going to bring the whole world down with them. Because at the end of the book of Revelation, by the way, jumping into the prophecies of the future again, at the end of the book of Revelation, and the book of Revelation lasts either 3.5 years or 7 years. There's a debate about this. I'm not sure which is. But at the end of it, we're told that a huge army from the east is going to rise up in the east, which numbers 200 million. And they're going to start marching westward across the world. And they're going to kill a third of the population of the world in their march westward. Mm. And they're going to be met in a valley in northern Israel called the Valley of Megiddo by this Antichrist and a huge force, military force from the west. And this Valley of Megiddo in northern Israel is where we get the word Armageddon from.
Yeah, that's right.
And then it says somebody hits the button, and John writes down, he said he saw flashes of lightning, he heard peals of thunder, rumblings, and then a huge earthquake. And he says no earthquake like this was ever heard before, even before or since. And then he said, excuse me, all the cities of the nations fell down. So when I wrote, put this in my book, when I was studying this, it says he saw flashes of lightning, he heard peals of thunder, rumblings, and then a huge earthquake. He called it an earthquake because that's the only language he had. And he said all the cities of the nations fell down. Henrik, there's only one thing that's going to make all the cities of the nations fall down at the same time. And that's a nuclear strike. And that's why he said he saw flashes of lightning. You see all these missiles shooting off, bombs going off. Then he heard rumblings. When the things explode, it's like rumblings you hear in the district.
Mm.
He said peals of thunder. That's the clacks you're going to hear. If you're up close to thunder, it's the same thing you'll hear when you hear rockets shooting off and missiles shooting off into the night. So remember the pictures we saw when the Americans were firing on Baghdad? This is what the Apostle John saw. But of course, the word missile or nuclear strike or helicopter or aircraft or bombs, they're not in his vocabulary. So he could only describe what he saw in terms of his own vocabulary of 2,000 years ago. So when he saw all these things going off, and he said all the cities of the earth fell down at the same time, that's what is a nuclear strike, and that's what Armageddon. And the army from the east numbering 200 million has to be the Chinese. The
Chinese, yeah, that's right.
It has to be. But getting back to the signs, these are the signs. Wars, famines, earthquakes all over the place, which are going through the roof these days. Weird weather. We're having the weirdest of weather. Everybody is. And then you put that together with the New World Order, with the EU, with NAFTA in America. You know, we are on the cusp of it, right?
Yeah.
But the good news is that there's a very weird thing is going to happen before all this comes to pass. And this is what Paul calls the gathering together of the church. In America, the Americans call it the rapture. And the rapture basically, and this is written about, you know, when I spoke to you earlier, when Jesus said, in my Father's house are many mansions. I go to prepare a place for you. And if I go and prepare a place for you, I will come again and take you unto myself, that where I am, there you are also. So he went to this house of many mansions to prepare a place for a visitation. He's been up there for the last 2,000 years. He's been mixing cement, you know, doing his woodwork, preparing a place for a visitation. It says he's coming back and he's taking out the Christians. In Thessalonians, it says he's coming back briefly in the air. It says the dead in Christ will rise first. Then we which are alive and remain shall be caught up to meet him in the air, and so shall we ever be with the Lord. He is taking out the real Christians, you know, born-again nutcases like me, Bible thumpers, people who literally accept him as their personal Lord and Savior and believe God raised him from the dead. That's all it takes to be saved, by the way. I don't go to Mass. I'm not a Catholic. I totally dislike the Catholic Church, and I like all forms of religion. And by the way, it was the chief priests and the Pharisees and the doctors of religion, the doctors of theology, that screwed Jesus Christ. They were the ones who were always trying to trip him up, who backed him into a corner, who organized his kangaroo court, his torture, and his murder. Mm. So plus ça change, as the French say. Plus ça change, plus c'est les mêmes choses. But the more things change, the more they stay the same. Nothing has changed. Religion is designed by Satan to lead everybody down the wrong path. Everybody's been deceived. Most of your listeners are secular people. We have all been deceived. I did it myself for 24 years. You know, sex, drugs, rock and roll, having a great time, until I fell on this thing. And the Messiah, Christianity, he's a cool guy. If you want to go for a beer with somebody, you want to go with Jesus. If he's here today, he's wearing, you know, a T-shirt and a pair of jeans and a pair of sandals, and he's the guy you want to go for a beer with. You know, he's a cool guy. There's nothing wrong with him. And when you learn about him, you know, one of the great things he said, and they shall know the truth, and the truth shall set you free. You know, if you want to be free, get to know this guy. Read him in Matthew, Mark, Luke, John. Just go and read what he says. Seek and thou shalt find, ask and it shall be given, knock and the door shall be opened unto you. I don't know about Sweden, Henrik, but there's incredible amount of suicides in Ireland at the moment for the last number of years. And it's all young men between 18 and 30, primarily, right? And it's gone up 43% since last year. Because people have no hope. You know, they've no hope. They're looking at the stuff in the world. They're looking at the economy. They're looking at these wars and famines. Of course, there's no God anymore. There's no good. There's no evil. There's no devil. There's no hope. So why would you want to stay alive? What I'm saying is there is hope. There is something else out there. And that's what I provide for you in my books. I'm not religious people. I like pints of Guinness. I like red wine. I like a few Irish whiskies, you know. I enjoy fun with people. And if you come over to Ireland, I'll go out and have a few pints with you. I'm telling you that there's something more there, and that the answer to all these mysteries, there is a truth. And the answer, the key to this is this guy called the Messiah, or we call him Jesus, Jesus Christ. A very cool guy, but we don't know anything about him because we were never taught anything about him. We were taught a bunch of old rubbish, the Catholic Church, you know. In fact, they treated us like mushrooms, you know. Keep them in the dark and feed them shit, you know.
Yes, and you know, right now, from my own perspective, from the theological perspective and religious perspective, I do hold another view. But what I find so interesting here as well is that I believe that especially the book of Revelation is kind of a blueprint, if you will, of how they, and with they I mean our leaders, they run the show right now, have decided to kind of play out the geopolitical game, the chessboard, as some people even call it. And the miracles that we hear about in the Bible actually could be things that we are going to see in the future in terms of new technological developments as well, that might have been seen as miracles back then. For instance, the solution to famine that we're going to be offered is they're going to be feeding people with genetically modified crops, and so they're going to be in more abundance. They're going to be more resistant to this, that, and the other. The solution to death or even aging might come in the terms of gerontologists and these longevity scientists that might even bring people back from the dead, but at least keep them alive for a long, long time. And in terms of the Medigo thing that you mentioned before, World War III, that is definitely on the ball. And that's why I also like to keep an eye on this and try to see how it's being played out, because it seems that one is replicating the other. And even if you believe that it's because of prophecy or accuracy in terms of theology, it still matches each other. And that's what I think is really interesting here, Patrick.
Yeah. How long do we have left, Henrik?
We can go for another 5 or 10 minutes, whatever
okay,
you want.
Well, let me just explain to your listeners the difference between the Bible and any other book ever written, right? About 40% of the Bible is prophetic. It's telling you things that are going to happen before they happen, so that the veracity or truthfulness is borne out either by the fulfillment or non-fulfillment of the prophecies. In other words, if they're all fulfilled, then, you know, it's true. But if they're not fulfilled, then you say, well, this is a bunch of rubbish. You know, I go back to reading Playboy or, you know, Ulysses or whatever, War and Peace or something like that, or the local newspaper. But that's the difference. You know, the prophecies about the Messiah, he fulfilled, was 109 specific prophecies that were written about him in his life on earth. In fact, if any of you people saw the Passion of the Christ that was made by Mel Gibson a few years ago, it was based on the last few days of the life of Jesus. In the last 24 hours of his life, 25 specific prophecies came to pass in the last 24 hours of his life. Like, I'll give you a few of them. It was prophesied that he'd be betrayed by his friend. It would be prophesied that he would be betrayed for 30 pieces of silver. It was prophesied that his friend would commit suicide. It was prophesied that they would use the money to buy the potter's field. It was prophesied that they would stick a spear into his side and water and blood would come out. It was prophesied that he would be crucified between thieves and robbers. It was prophesied that they would gamble over his seamless robe, etc., etc. This is how you can verify this out. And one Canadian scholar did a little study of probability. He took 9 prophecies, just 9 prophecies that were written about the Messiah, and he ascribed probability to them. So he took the first one, which is written in the book of Micah, that Jesus would be born in the village of Bethlehem. Now, there was thousands and thousands of villages in Palestine at that time. And Palestine was just a backwater of the Roman Empire. It was a Mickey Mouse place that nobody really cared about. So it was prophesied that the king, that the Messiah would be born here. Well, there's thousands and thousands of villages. So what he said was, we'll say it's 200 to 1. The chances are 200 to 1 that he'd be born in Bethlehem. Then he took another prophecy, that the Messiah would ride into Jerusalem triumphant on an ass's colt. Well, you know, kings, triumphant kings, don't go around riding asses. They ride a big white steed or a big black steed. But this prophecy said that this king would ride into Jerusalem on an ass's colt. Now he said, well, that's very unlikely. We'll make that 50 to 1. So the combined probabilities of him being born in Bethlehem and riding into Jerusalem on an ass are 50 by 200, which is 10,000 to 1. Then he took another prophecy and he ascribed that very conservative probability. And when he worked out the probability of all these prophecies coming to pass in one man's life, he came up with the chance of this happening of being 10 to the power of 16 zeros or something like that. Now, I don't even know what that is, but it's huge. And he explained it another way. This is the chances. He said, supposing I gave you a ring off my finger, Henrik, and I said, here, Henrik, take that ring. I want you to fly up in an airplane. So you fly up in an airplane and you fly around all the oceans of the world. And then somewhere over one of the oceans, you open the window and you throw out the ring. And then, I throw out the ring, right? I take your ring and I go up in the airplane and I throw it out over one of the oceans. Then I come back in the airplane and I go up to you, Henrik, and I said, okay, here's a boat and here's a fishing rod. You can sail anywhere you want around all the oceans of the world. And when you're feeling lucky, you can drop down your hook and you've got one chance to locate where your ring is down at the bottom of the ocean. That would be the same chance, the same probability of the Messiah fulfilling these 9 prophecies written about him according to the conservative probabilities that this mathematician put on them. Mm-hmm. And they were just 9 prophecies. The man fulfilled 109 specific prophecies during his life, including 25 specific prophecies coming to pass in the last 24 hours of his life. So everything, all the prophecies in the Bible thus far, about 85% of them are pertaining to where we've come to so far, Henrik, in this day of 2009. The last 15% of the prophecies or so are all pertaining to the book of Revelation, the Apocalypse, and what's coming down the tracks in the near future. So everything, 100%, has happened right on the money to date, including the fact that the Jews are back in Israel after 2,000 years almost of being scattered. If there was any other small ethnic group who were scattered all over the world, it would have been like throwing dust out into the wind. They would have just vanished, but not the Jews. There's 6.5 million of them back there. So the next big thing that's going to happen on the prophetic timeline is what the Americans call the rapture of the church, where he's coming back briefly to take out all the Christians, all those people who really believe in him. They're going out in the blink of an eye. One of these days, very soon, now I don't know how it's going to be, 1 year, 5 years or 20 years, but soon the world is going to wake up and there's going to be several hundred million people will have vanished off the face of the earth.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Very soon after that, the bottomless pit is going to be open, perhaps around the same time. It says smoke is going to come out of the bottomless pit, like I read to you earlier. And the smoke is going to blot out the sun so that you cannot see the sun and the moon, possibly for a few days. And when that blows away, these guys are going to appear on the earth. They're going to be there. This guy who's going to come and say, I am the Messiah. I am Jesus Christ. I am going to bring peace to the earth. I am going to get rid of famine. I'm going to get rid of wars. I'm going to bring mankind to the next level of evolution. And he's going to go out as a rider on a white horse with a bow and no arrow. And the whole world will be astonished when they see the beast, because he once was, now is not, and yet will come out of the abyss and go to his destruction. And when it says he will go to his destruction, it doesn't mean that he's destroyed. It means that by the end of the 3.5 years or the 7 years, the whole world, almost the whole world, is going to be destroyed. Something like 2/3 of the population of the world are going to be destroyed when this man comes. Mm-hmm. So when he gave the signs, wars, famines, earthquakes, diseases, that, and deception was the first one. That is the riders on the white horses, deception. The red horses, the wars. The black horses, the famines. And the death and destruction is the pale horse. That's what's coming down. But there is hope, listeners. The bad news is the Titanic is going down. The good news is you don't have to get on it. If you want to know the proof of this, buy one of my books. I totally recommend The Nephilim and the Pyramid of the Apocalypse. If you like the pyramids and all these ancient mysteries, lots of great pictures in there too. Or if you prefer to watch a DVD, I have a pretty cool DVD called The Return of the Nephilim, where I've got about 50 color pictures and video clips in there, and I'm talking on it. You can see me. I'm the good-looking guy up there cracking the jokes, and it's pretty funny too. There is hope for you. Don't just say, oh, yeah, this is great fun. And you know, if you want to know, there's hope for you, but there's a very, very bad time coming down. And it was my job to tell you that this place is going to go through a very bad time. Now, if you don't believe me, you're going to get a second chance. If you wake up some morning and, you know, you're in blackness and darkness, and then you listen to the news and you find out millions of people have vanished. Number one, you're up the creek with no paddle for the next 3.5 or 7 years, but there is still hope for you. There's still a chance for you. This guy is going to come in earth. People are not going to be allowed to buy or sell, do any work or do any buying or selling unless they've got a mark on their right hand or on their forehead. This is called 666, the mark of the beast. It may be a microchip, but I'm saying you can still, there is still hope for you to get to the end of that, but you're going to go through a very, very bad time. Christians, there's going to be a huge amount of that of Christians are going to become Christians during that time, Henrik.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to be hunted down. They're going to be tortured. They're going to be beheaded. In fact, it says in one passage in Isaiah, it says they will dash your children to death against the trees and the walls before your eyes. They will show no mercy. It's going to be a terrible, terrible time for people who believe in that period. But there is still hope for you. What I'm saying to you now is you don't have to get on the Titanic at all. Don't even go there. Read one of my books and you'll find the answer.
All right, Patrick. Very interesting hearing from you and from your perspective. And I want to thank you very much for coming on, of course, and sharing some of this material and research with us. But why don't you tell us your website again and mention your titles as a way of rounding things up for us here.
Okay, the name of my website is www.neft, that's neph.ie, or as I say, you Swedes have a bit of an American accent, so it's neph.ie.
That wouldn't sound right. That would sound right.
It's neft.ie. I've got my first book, which is very short. You read it in a few hours. It's called Apocalypse Soon. It's like a sawn-off shotgun. It's a great little book. It was a bestseller in Ireland. The next one is called The Apocalypse Generation, which gives you some more information. My third one is called The Nephilim and the Pyramid of the Apocalypse. And that was number one in the prophecy section of Amazon Books for 2 years. I've sold about 40,000 copies of that, which is not bad for somebody who self-published. But one of the top 10 publishers in the States have published that book now, and it's still selling quite well. I've got a DVD called The Great Pyramid and the Apocalypse. I've got another DVD called The Return of the Nephilim. And there's another one done by Grizzly Adams called Apocalypse and the End Times. How close are we? And I've also got some other interviews that I did, which are on my website there. So if you want to buy one of the books from me on my website, I'll sign it for you. I'll send it off to you. And if any of you guys come over to Dublin or down to the west of Ireland where I have my little cottage, you can send me an email, give me a shout, and I'll go out and I'll buy you a pint of Guinness. The first one is on me.
Sounds good. Okay. Links to this, of course, will be up on the Red Eyes website as well, so you can click through from there easily. All right. Thank you very much for joining us, Patrick.
Thank you very much, Henrik. Thank you very, very much for having me on.
All right, that's our program with Patrick Heron. Don't miss our upcoming programs with Peter Lavenda, John Cale, and many more. Just check our upcoming guests in the radio archive. And, of course, suggest a guest or a topic in the start page in our member section. My thanks to Fredrik and Elizabeth and to you for listening. My name is Henrik. We will talk more soon. Take good care.